dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man of uncommon intelligence who has graced this program many times, for which I am profoundly grateful, is back with us for a full hour to talk about a problem that I think has to be top of mind for all of us. It is a focus of his work, both as a journalist, as a law enforcement intelligence professional in his native state of Texas with the Department of Public Safety, and now in his role as a national security fellow with the indispensable Center for Immigration Studies. It is also the focus of a very important new book that he has produced entitled America's Covert Border War, and it talks about a problem that is getting way too little attention, and that is the jihadist component of our border insecurity. His name is Todd Bensman. He is always a welcome guest here, especially on the occasion of the publication of this very important new contribution to our understanding of the threats we're facing and what we need to do about them. Todd, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Frank.
Well, truly, the pleasure is mine. Todd, before we get into the book and the sort of specific concerns that you're describing that we, again, have to address from a national security perspective, I thought we might just set the stage a little bit by recapping some of the things we've talked about to date in terms more generally of the problem that exists on a good day and now are being greatly compounded by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's administration in terms of open borders and invitations to illegal aliens to come here. As a practical matter, what I think has been called the Biden effect. Talk a little bit about this backdrop for your book.
We're in the midst of a mass migration crisis at the border. It's begun. The numbers of illegal aliens crossing the border, reaching northern Mexico and crossing the border in just January reached 78,000, pushing 80,000. And those are just the ones that are recorded as being apprehended and not including a great many what they call gotaways in jargon, Border Patrol jargon, which are very significant numbers. They're going to turn out to be folks that just rushed past, got in on trucks, got past the Border Patrol and disappeared. And that was just in January. And I expect that it's not unreasonable that that for this month, at the end of this month, when the numbers come out, that it'll be well over 100. And that puts us in historic crisis mode.
100,000, that is. And Todd, what's the rule of thumb of the numbers apprehended versus the numbers that get away?
It depends who you talk to, but the one that I hear most often is that for every one caught, there are three that got through that you didn't catch. But I've heard it, you know, it go as high as seven, and we just don't really know.
So just to put a fine point on it, if there are 100,000 you expect in the next month to be apprehended breaking into our country, that's perhaps as many as 300,000 that actually got in. That is a crisis. There's no getting around it. 300,000 people a month making their way into our country. And then, unfortunately, as we'll be talking about, I know, in the course of our discussion today, there's the number of people that are apprehended that are simply turned loose in the country. So that could be approaching 400,000 in a single month. Is that right?
Well, the ones that we release will be counted in the first, 100,000, typically, because they'll have self-presented and they'll be logged. So we'll know about that. We'll know about them, and I expect that those numbers will definitely increase. But the ones that got away, we'll really never know the numbers on those. And I was going to tell you, I had a Border Patrol agent tell me last week that they catch 3 in 10, and they'll rush a whole truckload will pour out and across the river, run past them. They can maybe catch 2 or 3, and then the rest just keep going. They never catch.
It's obviously a strategic or a tactic they can use to great effect to ensure that most of them at least make it through. So, Todd, this is again a matter of deliberate public policy choice by the Biden administration. They would have us believe that Americans voted for this, but in your experience and based on polling data and so on, it does not seem as though most Americans think this is a very good idea. Is that right?
Right. Well, the majority of Americans believe that, or they want illegal immigration at the border to fall, to decline. They do not want it to increase. That is definitely not what anybody anticipated. Even Democrats are on the border in blue districts begging the Biden administration to reverse itself on these policies. These are Democrats, very blue Democrats, I might add. The mayor of Del Rio, a congressman in the Rio Grande Valley, who are just coming flat out and just saying, you are fomenting a mass migration crisis.
Not a few of them are Hispanic of origin themselves, in my experience. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And the reason that they're so concerned is because in the last election, those districts down there, which have always been turquoise blue, went red or close to red, and they'll be voted out of office. Yeah, they went Trump red. And they're particularly worried, these elected leaders, that they're going to be thrown out of office if they don't come out against it. What's happened?
So, Todd, and again, we're going to turn to your important new book, America's Covert Border War, in our next segments and the ones that follow. But just again, to set the predicate, we're talking about a situation that Joe Biden inherited that was relatively secure, by virtue of arrangements with Mexico, by virtue of the wall, by virtue of just the deterrent policies that the Trump administration had pursued with Guatemala and Honduras, as well as Mexico and so on. All of that seems now to be over the side, if I'm not mistaken. And the signal that's being sent to the world is, y'all come, isn't it? And if that's so, numbers that you're talking about, which are already crisis levels, will presumably only intensify in terms of numbers and probably in terms of problems like public health as people come in with COVID, or public safety as people come in with, malign intent. Again, turning to the subject of your book in just a moment. Actually, I have to pause on that. We're going to turn to that subject with you right now. After a short commercial message, we'll be right back with Todd Bensman, the author of America's Covert Border War, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Todd Bensman. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies, an organization that I have found over the years to be extraordinarily helpful in understanding the challenges that we're facing in terms of immigration policy and malpractice. It's never been more important than it is today, and that's not least because of the work of a great team there, including our guest, Todd Bensman. Todd is the author of an extremely important and timely book entitled America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Todd, we've talked a little bit about the backdrop to all of this. Tell us about jihadists and why infiltration by them of Western countries, and maybe we could start with Europe because you've been monitoring what they've been doing there very carefully, and what we must be concerned about them doing here, is truly such a threat?
The issue really is that there is a brand new tactic, terrorism tactic in the world that is very under acknowledged right now, and it's border infiltration. We, since 9/11, all the Western countries, the United States, Canada, and most of Europe, really tightened up the airport-to-airport travel that was used to be used. You know, you had all the 19 hijackers came in on visas. And those have been tightened up and made more difficult to, get to your target. But what we saw happen in about 2014, 2015 is that there was a mass migration crisis similar to what we're experiencing right now on our southern border and will for the next 4 years happening in Europe. We had millions of migrants pooling up on the borders, begging and demanding to be let in on asylum. Angela Merkel of Germany was the first to say everybody gets in. And then came France, and most of the other countries followed suit, sort of a virtue signaling who's going to be more open and generous. And so what happened is you saw millions of migrants just flow in, applying for asylum over the borders, and ISIS purposefully deployed operatives in that flow, camouflaged in that flow to get into France, Germany, Finland, the UK, all of the European countries, and they began conducting attacks. And we saw these attacks most visibly with Paris, multiple suicide bombings, Brussels, a lot of dead, a lot of wounded, big story. But what you didn't hear is how those operatives got in. They got in over the border. Prior to Europe in 2015, when these attacks started happening, this was just a notional idea that, what if they came in over the border? We should have border security for that. But this was proof of concept, absolute devastating proof of concept, where ISIS purposefully deployed at least 27 operatives that I've been able to document. And they've been committing terror attacks throughout Europe, not just this 27, but lone offenders, people that are just have the jihadist predilection, sort of caught the virus from wherever they were from, in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Sudan, came in over the borders, applied for asylum. We just had one of them stab an asylum officer to death last week in the neck. It's attacked. That one was in, I believe, France. Prior to that, we had, these attacks and plots have continued for 5 years straight without let up.
And Todd, just to set the predicate for this a bit, people listening to this, especially the farther we've gotten away from, thank God, massive bloodletting at the hands of such people, like 9/11, of course, may find it inexplicable why jihadists would do this. You've studied these guys. You've looked at them particularly from the perspective of a guy working the terrorism beat in Texas, right there at the border. What is animating them to seek to do violent harm to innocent people, an asylum officer or a priest practicing a mass, or, mass casualties for that matter in civilian settings?
Well, there are a variety of advantages that ISIS, achieved through this, but it always boils down to the same thing, that there's an ideology that sees the world in terms of Islam dominating the world in various forms, like in a caliphate. that in order to achieve the caliphate, you have to infiltrate your enemies, these other religions. In this case, you know, a Christian Europe, they say it. We have lots of documentation about why these particular operatives did what they did. Sometimes it had to do with, you know, French airstrikes or Germany's, you know, battalions that were in Syria or, you know, some sort of airstrike or whatever. But ultimately, it's this idea that there's a global war. There should be a global war where Islam emerges victorious and subjugates all other religions. This is in their words, not my characterization of it. So they often are picked up in communications or on social media, almost always talking in terms of the global jihad against the infidels. And in this case, the infidels are the people that are bringing them in under, you know, a sense of generosity. So they're, you know, getting into the homes of their benefactors and murdering them.
This is what I call Sharia supremacism. It's the idea that they will apply that ideology, Sharia being sort of the doctrine of Islam, very literally, according to the tenets of the faith and the personal life experiences of Muhammad, the prophet of the faith. And it is inherently violent and requires ultimately the subjugation of those who are the target of the violence. And it's not to say that all Muslims, you know, practice their faith this way or necessarily seek the end states that that those who are following this doctrine of Sharia aspire to. But it's an authoritative practice within the faith. Let's be clear about that. And it does give rise to very serious security problems. And so this brings us to the covert border war that you have been monitoring and have now chronicled in the book. Tell us a little bit about the nature of that war in our country, because we too have been targeted by these guys, obviously, and give us a sense of the extent to which you think we, like Europe, face this as a very real problem for our people and our country.
Right. Well, it bears remembering that people coming from countries, Muslim-majority countries, may or may not have the ideology. They may not be coming with the ideology, but they're coming from nations where the ideology is institutionalized in the at the mosques and the madrasas and in government and in law and in constitutions. Their teachers, their neighbors, their everybody in their lives are preaching this. It's in the newspapers and on television. And so when migrants are coming from those countries, they have to be regarded as a different and higher risk than a Spanish-speaking Honduran coming out of Central America, right? And after 9/11, of course, you know, the American Homeland Security Enterprise was very concerned with sewing up all of the access points, starting with all of the methods and means by which the 9/11 hijackers got into the country. And one of the obvious places to sew up was the border, the southern border, which is wide open. Everybody in Homeland Security at that time understood that. Laws were passed. Money was appropriated. And strategic plans were implemented to sew up that border. And that is where the
including, as I recall, to build a wall, was it then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you read the legislation authorizing construction of the wall in 2006, it was the Fence Act of 2006. It explicitly says this is to stop terrorists from crossing between ports of entry. People forget.
And enjoyed broad bipartisan support, as I recall, at the time.
Absolutely. I mean, this was not considered a crazy notion at all by anyone. It was an obvious thing. It was still notional since it hadn't really happened that way. It was easier for terrorists to fly airport to airport and somehow get in on some kind of visa So what happened, though, was that laws were passed, there was legislation, there were strategic plans, and this is the genesis of the covert border war. What emerged was what I call in the book a near war and a far war. It was legislated and mandated, and it's been supported in all of the years since.
All right, Todd, hold that thought, because we're going to talk about both the near and the far war, but we have to take a short break before we do that. And I just want to make sure that as we make this transition, we realize that, again, that these are policies that have been, over time, supported by both Republicans and Democrats, as they should be. And we'll talk about what has happened to that consensus in recent days and years. Todd Bensman is our guest, the author of America's Covert Border War, the untold story of the nation's battle to prevent jihadist infiltration. I'll be right back.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're continuing for this full hour a conversation about a tremendously important topic, both in the macro sense of the present danger of border insecurity and what that means for a country like ours with, well, enemies like ours. Our guest is Todd Bensman, who has gone beyond the macro, however, to drill down on a particularly concerning piece of this, and that is the degree to which we are facing a specific threat from jihadist elements seeking to bring here their destructive campaigns to force our submission. So Todd, in the last block, you introduced the idea of both a near and far aspect to this covert border war. Why don't you start with the near facet of it and tell us what that entails and how it's been going?
Sure. The near war really has to do with a fact that Homeland Security authorities back right after 9/11 were very well aware of, and they knew that they had to target it, which was a migration flow from Muslim majority countries coming over the southern border. It had always been happening, but it had never really been targeted, or there really wasn't that much interest in it until 9/11, that we had thousands of migrants every year coming from places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Yemen, and what ultimately turned out to be about 35 to 40 countries that got identified. So the near war has to...
Wow, 35 or 40 countries. That's a big chunk of the world, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the list varies. Sometimes it's been as high as 50. I think right now, or under the Trump administration, the list was about 24, but most often it's at about 35 countries that are identified. They're in the book, and the intelligence community came up with this list. And the reason the intelligence community came up with that list was if you were a migrant that came from one of the countries on that list, you would get tagged with a term called Special Interest Alien, SIA. If you got tagged with that term and you showed up at the border, it went into the database, and security protocols then followed for that migrant. The FBI would go into the detention facility and conduct, for example, in-depth face-to-face interviews, because let's face it, we don't really didn't have much of a relationship with Syria, so you can't call Syria and ask them for an intelligence share or a background check. And there were a lot of countries like that.
Or they're simply failed states in which there's no authorities with whom to really speak about these kinds of data questions.
That's right. And they're showing up. These are not people who have, where we have at least the benefit of a visa application. These are people who show up without even a passport, and they just say, my name's Mickey Mouse, and I apply for asylum, and, you know, the vetting is very thin on those guys, and just like in Europe.
But again, just to go back to what we talked about at the beginning, Todd, this is a category of people, special interest aliens, who have been apprehended. This is not to contemplate the numbers that have got away that are abroad in the land, but presumably there are three times as many of them as well, would you not say, as a working hypothesis?
Right.
That's right. There are many that get through and they may get caught 3 or 4 years later and they still get tagged SIA. But it's, you know, I mean, as we saw in Europe.
Or they may not get caught.
Yeah. As we saw it in Europe, they're in the country for some period of years, whether they're caught or apply for asylum or not. And then they have time to plot and carry out their plot. So there's a protocol we've had in place where we do these interviews. There are 8 steps that are necessary. It has to do with database checks and flagging, and different agencies have been involved. The FBI for a lot of years involved. There were teams of special agents that would go into the detention facilities. They still do to this day. American public doesn't know about this, and to the best of their ability, try to figure out if they're lying or if there's something going on with them, if they're on a terror watch list, if they're from Pakistan or a place where we've got military operations, and it could be somebody who's angry about that. You know, we know about that Islamic fundamentalists like to retaliate for, you know, drone strikes and things like that. And so there was a lot of worry about that. That is happening at the southern border right now. Still goes on. We do the best we can, but it is far from perfect. Not all of them get interviewed either before they bond out into the interior on asylum claims.
Okay, so that's the near war. That's really engaging folks right here as they're coming across. What's the far war? And how does that play into trying to improve our chances in what seems to be a pretty grim operation at the border?
Far war is probably one of the most fascinating and intriguing aspects of the U.S., the American war on terror that I've ever heard of. We have seen Pulitzer Prizes handed out for media breaking stories about different counterterrorism programs after 9/11, like, you know, the enhanced interrogation and drone strikes and all of those kind of things. But nobody has ever written about what we're doing in the FAR war. And what that involves, there's multiple parts of that. The main part is ICE Homeland Security investigations is in many Latin American countries hunting down SIA smugglers, the people, the highly specialized smugglers that are able to move migrants over the Atlantic Ocean and get them into South America, into the Americas, and then on the trails north to the border. And there is a hunt that has been going on for them for, you know, 12, 13 years now, because it's understood that you have to blow the bridge in order to, you know, retard the migration of those people. And so you have these incredible, you know, multi-nation investigations that are going on involving vetted proxy law enforcement teams in those countries. Fascinating story of really amazing intrigue and investigation where they trick these guys into reaching the United States and get arrested and prosecuted. We've had probably about 25 or 30 prosecutions of major SIA smugglers. But then we also are having, you know, countries like Brazil and Ecuador and even Mexico prosecute SIA smugglers in their own countries. There are sovereignty issues there. But we've got intelligence agencies down there that are working. The U.S. Navy has been involved in these operations. The Coast Guard, the CIA, NSA, we're using satellite. I mean, because it's foreign investigations, we can bring to bear the full array of American capabilities to this war, and we have. And that's part of it. And then another part of the FAR war is even more intriguing, which is that we have set up in with allied countries tripwire systems where when one is a migrant is tagged as a jihadist, we have all these countries working together trying to find that person and get them behind bars for interrogation and enhanced investigation, intelligence analysis to find out who they are and to neutralize them. And it's really been very effective so far, and with a little bit of luck also, I'll have to say, where you've got an intelligence report like just a few months ago of four ISIS operatives that were moving through Central America, had gotten through Panama and were moving through, and we managed to catch them in Nicaragua. The Nicaraguans handed them off to Costa Rica. And then in Costa Rica, we had American intelligence officers go into the detention facility and work them over, so to speak. And we had that sort of thing happen over and over
again. Reading them their Miranda rights, I'm sure.
Yeah, we had that sort of thing happen over and over again throughout Latin America.
But that presumed a relationship between the countries in question and the United States government that made them feel they wanted to cooperate with it. That was in part, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Todd, but a function of not wanting to anger Donald Trump or get on his bad side, lest there be repercussions in the trade arrangements or other relationships between the United States and their country, no? And is that likely to be still the case in a Biden-Harris administration?
Well, I have to presume, look, this is these wars, these efforts and operations, which are have a basis in statutory requirement that they do it, have transcended Democrat and Republican administration. So you might remember that Trump talked about terrorists crossing the border several times during his term. Most recently, on January 12th, he was standing by the wall in Alamo, Texas, and he said, this thing has stopped terrorists crossing, way more terrorists than the American public would ever understand or know. And so he clearly has access to intelligence and information about what's been going on with this. I have to believe, and I do believe, that so far the careerist, apolitical Homeland Security professionals who are running these operations inside ICE, HSI, and the FBI don't get a lot of political intervention from either Democrats or Republicans on this. And as a matter of fact, my book...
We're going to talk about that more. Todd, I want you to have to ask you to break just for a second because we've got to take a final commercial break. But I just want to say that is a proposition that will be sorely tested, I'm afraid, in this administration. We'll see, and we'll talk about it right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to this fourth and final installment of our very timely and, I think, riveting conversation with the author of an important new book. It's called America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. His name is Todd Bensman. He's a good friend of this program. We're always delighted to have him with us from the Center for Immigration Studies. And Todd, you were just entertaining a bit of a challenge for me as to whether the Biden administration is going to continue the FAR war, which you believe, as I understand it, has made a material difference to the near war in terms of stopping the kind of infiltration from people motivated by jihad, by Sharia, who seek to do us harm and are coming here illegally for that purpose.
That's right. You have to keep in mind that this double cordon of the near and far war has kept America safe so far, and not just by the skill of the agents and intelligence people working it, but just by sheer luck that they caught people. I just want to run through a couple of things. Jihadists have been caught in this thing. There are 20, roughly 20 terror watch listed migrants apprehended in this thing on an annual basis by my count. And
just to give you an idea that in Panama alone, just in the last 3 years, they've apprehended 49 jihad people who are thought to have been jihadists or have connectivity to jihadist organizations. In Mexico, there were 19 deportations of jihadists that were apprehended there. The Americans have always had a hand in all of these deportations, by the way. There's not one of these guys that gets caught without the Americans being very involved in these programs. And about 20 watch lists of the year that actually are apprehended down there or at the physical U.S. border. And we tend to deport them. And quite a few of them have actually been prosecuted and sent to U.S. prisons for jihadist activity and immigration charges and the rest. One of these guys went, a Somali went, came in over the California border and made his way to Canada and conducted in 2017 a double vehicle ramming attack carrying an ISIS flag. The Canadians had alerts on this guy, but you know how that works. So, you know, they didn't have enough. So there are jihadists that are being apprehended and have kept us safe. But when you have mass migration, when you have a crisis like you had in Europe, all those systems break down and become incapacitated. And that is the real threat here. That our HSI guys down there, their ICE is being gutted right now. My big fear is whether HSI is going to get gutted along with them and what they're doing in Latin America, if they'll be redeployed from the SIA smuggler hunt and for what they're doing with the tripwires down there. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
This is the point I was trying to get at before the break, Todd, is I fear that a Biden administration, notwithstanding the career professionals and the statutory directions and all the rest, seem bent on destroying these kinds of capabilities to protect us from, well, illegal immigrants, perhaps including, maybe not deliberately, but nonetheless catching up in their midst, as you said, those who are seeking to get here not just for economic opportunity or social welfare benefits or having their children here or whatever, but to do real material harm. And the point specifically that you just touched on, what Biden is doing through administrative orders handed down by the new Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas is, it seems to me, dispositive evidence of the malign intent when they're really taking ICE down.
Well, you have to remember that in general, people on the Democratic left and the folks who have a lot of influence right now deny that this kind of migration even happened. They deny it and say it's a lie. It doesn't even happen. So the big fear really is that, you know, in that denial, this is not a problem. This is not a threat that they would. And it's sort of the same ideology that the European leaderships had in 2015. It's the exact same ideology. We are a benevolent, welcoming nation. We're going to let everyone in because we love diversity and we don't discriminate on the basis of nationality or religion. Everybody gets in. That sort of thing can't be applied to people from Muslim majority countries because people from those countries are just inherently a higher risk if you have no idea who they even are, their names. And I'll just mention that that I have a story coming out, hasn't published yet, that there is a tremendous surge of special interest alien right now happening just right alongside with Spanish-speaking migrants in places like Suriname. And there was a huge conflict on a bridge between Peru and Brazil, a 400 migrant caravan that had a lot of Bangladeshis in it and Pakistanis and Somalis within it. And the same thing is happening in Panama and Costa Rica, where, you know, small caravans, you know, I don't know, 400, 500 people are forming up all over South America, very energized by the Biden open border. And they're on their way, too.
The Biden effect. Exactly right. The tractor beam is the way I think of it from Star Trek. All right. So, Todd, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I do want to make sure we close with the subject of your ninth chapter in America's Covert Border War, which is remedies. talk about what can be done to try to assure that despite some of these misbegotten policies, we are actually trying to maintain our security against these jihadist elements in particular?
Well, I've mentioned that this issue, the near and the far war, the covert border war, has always been bipartisan behind the scenes. The Obama administration under Jay Johnson in his last 6 months in office in 2016 ordered up a major rehabilitation of the covert border war, called together all of the heads of DHS that deal with the border and immigration, and ordered that they all get on the same page and assess and evaluate these programs. Trump got into office and things mixed up and got shaken up and different personnel came in and that program never happened. This is under a Democrat. They understood from what was happening in Europe that there was a very heightened risk that this would happen at the southern border, and they ordered this thing up on the basis of it. My number one
presumably one of those was Alejandro Mayorkas, no?
No, well, Mayorkas didn't have anything to do with this, but I think I believe he was actually on the, I'd have to double check, I've got the memo.
I thought he was Customs and Border Enforcement at the time or something to that effect.
But my number one recommendation, actually, because I'm not partisan on this, is to bring back Jay Johnson's plan, his SIA covert border war rehabilitation plan from 2016. And there are other recommendations as well, having to do with the asylum system that jihadists took advantage of in Europe and which are also vulnerable here. Terrible vulnerabilities. I have an entire chapter dedicated to how jihadists have used our asylum system in the same way that they've used the European asylum system. Too detailed to go into here in your segment, but very interesting how they use the asylum process. The Biden administration is opening up that asylum process, reversing all of the safeguards that Trump had put in. And I'm extremely concerned about what's happening with the asylum system. Jihadists will take advantage of that the same way that they did in Europe.
In the past, yeah. We should be on notice, in other words. And this book is so helpful, Todd, and your visit with us is as well, to just make clear that there are lessons that if we don't learn them, we will be much worse off. And if we do, we can spare ourselves considerable grief at the hands, particularly of the jihadists who seek to come here for the forceful imposition of their domination over us. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time today, Todd Bensman, and all the work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies. And once again, I'm very pleased to have had a chance to talk with you about this work of yours. I know it was a long time coming, and it bears all that you put into it. The America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. It's available on Amazon and elsewhere. Please check it out, folks. Todd, thank you for your time today. Come back to us again soon, if you would. And I hope the rest of you do the same again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.